Hayden, what eggs do you buy?
That's a really difficult question because I feel like I'm a responsible consumer. When it comes to Whole Foods and there are so many eggs just here, I don't know which one's going to make me feel the best and which is going to taste the best.
Wow, that was not at all a very heavy-handed way to talk about the amazing things we're going to talk about on this episode of BP Radio.
That's because today we're going to talk a lot about food and specifically the questions of the ethical consumer choices that people make when they have to choose what they eat.
For instance, when you are shopping for eggs, what do all these various labels mean? Like
free range,
cage free, or free range,
cage free plus.
Cage free plus. They got red boxes. They got purple boxes. They got ones with pictures of farmers on them. So you're just like, oh my God, I'm helping my local farmer with this nationally available chain of eggs.
So basically, I think this is a good, interesting way of getting at the hard questions that like food and shopping presents that oftentimes you're not forced to think about if you're not really considering where your food comes from or what the processes are that bring it to you.
But as college students, we always like to think about the ethics and really all of the questions behind things that you don't really need to think about, but it's important to think about.
Yeah, because that's sort of the point of being in college. And I feel like the food space in college is this interesting place where, in one sense, you're stereotyped as just having, you know, instant ramen noodles a lot, or you're presented with a dining hall in which you don't really have to reflect all that much on the choices of what you're eating. But that's sort of a privilege that we have that we're going to explore on today's episode.
So specifically on today's episode, we're going to talk about what it means to be an ethical consumer and look at it through a bunch of different lenses, like through federal policy, movements in ethical consumerism, and then just like ethical consumerism writ large.
I just feel like my radio voice doesn't sound very good right now, you know?
Oh, we got, all right, wait, you want
to are we on? Are we live? I feel like I'm ready this time.
All right, go.
But I've lost the moment. Like, I think you
do
can it. Take it. I think you want it more than me.
This is BP Radio.
This is BP Radio.
This is BP Radio.
In this part of today's episode, we're going to talk about how sort of government and policy affect the foods we eat. Because as 21st century consumers, food is all around us, but it's not clear to me that we always think about where it comes from.
Yeah, and longtime BPR readers will know of the great impacts that the government can have on our food choices, even when we do not think about them at all. I'm thinking about big dairy when we talked about how cheese and like the massive overproduction of cheese in the United States is a direct result of massive subsidies that go to our dairy farmers, even though we already produce way too much dairy. That just like goes to illustrate how a very large impact of what we eat and a lot of the choices that we make in terms of food are not really made by us, but are more made in policy. And that policy is shaped by a very, very vocal and small minority whose impact affects absolutely all of us.
It's a little known fact, probably less than 1% of the workforce in the U.S. is involved in agriculture,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
As opposed to the turn of the 19th century,
right.
when a huge percentage of the labor force was involved in agriculture. So the kind of public consciousness of what underlies the food system in terms of agricultural production is diminished.
So you just heard from Alan Hance, who is a former policy analyst and legislative fellow who worked on agriculture policy in the U.S. House of Representatives.
And agriculture policy is really interesting for a few reasons. One is just that as Americans have grown farther and farther away from an agricultural economy where fewer and fewer people are working in the direct production of our food, it would have made you think that like it would lead to a decreasing emphasis on like food policy. But that has simply made it so that a larger and larger like portion of like what we eat and like what affects what we consume is the direct outcome of this very small number of people who have a large impact on what happens in the Farm Bill, which is a cornerstone of agricultural policy since the 20th century that is revised every few years in Congress and is the main avenue through which these individual farmers and this small number of people have a big impact on what we eat.
Yeah, so the Farm Bill is this really important thing, as Noah just talked about, and it gets at how food policy has a lot of different impacts, and one of which that Hance is particularly concerned about is how the policies we pass in our food legislation impacts the sustainability of the American food system.
How can we work to make the system more environmentally sustainable, mm-hmm. so that the negative impacts of industrial agriculture and small-scale agriculture mm-hmm. are minimized, mm-hmm. or that we're actually producing net environmental benefits mm-hmm. through agriculture, yes. which is itself quite possible. Mm-hmm. That food is affordable. Mm-hmm. For all, mm-hmm. And so that we're thinking about the food system in terms of food insecurity, and that we're also thinking in terms of the livelihood of farmers and farm workers, so that there's economic sustainability mm-hmm. built into the system as well, right. i.e. that the system is not subsidizing big ag mm-hmm. in a way that is unfair and unjustifiable mm-hmm. and environmentally unsustainable. Mm-hmm. unsustainable, and or relying on farm labor practices that are exploitative.
So to me, what Hans's comment brings up are important questions about the relationship between sustainability and sort of negative externalities, in the sense that in the way we have food production, it seems from a really far away level that we produce food, it gets transported, it comes, we eat it. But there's so many other impacts that come along the way that are deeply affected by the policy choices that government makes. For example, when you produce food, the local communities are changed. Literally, you can start from the level of the soil or just the ways that local production chains work. Obviously, we could talk about bigger impacts like Hans mentioned about climate change and about how sort of resource use goes into our food production. That affects water usage, it affects CO2 emissions and all sorts of other things that aren't immediately apparent if you're just thinking broadly about food policy.
So obviously the government has a really large impact on what we eat, and that goes and has impacts on so many other aspects of our life. But all of these impacts and all of these choices that are being made by government are nearly invisible to us because we just can't see what they're choosing to subsidize, how they chose to subsidize something, and everything feels like a black box. But our politics are made by us, and we necessarily need to reframe the way that we think about the choices that government is making, educate ourselves on the choices that are being made.
It was more of an organizing effort,
yeah.
and in some ways more of a communications effort.
Yeah.
So we devoted a fair amount of time to talking about how do we reframe the terms of the debate mm-hmm. so that it becomes something that broader publics care about.
Right.
If very few people have any direct link to agricultural production anymore, mm-hmm. how do you even elevate yeah. the issue so uh-huh. that it has some kind of resonance mm-hmm. for a general audience?
Yeah.
And part of our effort was by talking more about food. I mean,
right.
it's a strange fact that the term for this massive piece of federal legislation is the Farm Bill, mm-hmm. when in fact the vast majority of the funds that are allocated through the Farm Bill go to nutrition programs.
Interesting.
So, for example, the food stamp program, which is now SNAP, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, is the lion's share of the monies that are articulated, that are authorized and through the Farm Bill. So we started to talk about it as the Food and Farm Bill, for example, just to begin to reset the frame. Everybody eats, so everybody has some kind of an interest in this set of policies. I mean, the other kind of interesting, it's not just the general public, too, that knows very little about this piece of legislation. It's also true of legislators on Capitol Hill.
So the Farm Bill includes the ways that government influences what we eat by changing the cost and the price of all of these things. And inside of the cost and price for all of the food that we see are the specific government choices involved in what we should be eating and what should be cheaper.
Yeah, and I think that what Noah's talking about brings up sort of an interesting dichotomy between how we understand how change in the food system gets made. There's one argument, and we've talked a lot about it in this section, that food policy and the choices you make at a government level play a huge role in how we eat and even how we understand the food that is around us. But there's a similar kind of argument that says that how food change gets made is by the ways in which we think about it and understand our relationship to what we eat and the nutritional value that we intake. So in the next section, we are going to talk about food and social trends and different notions of justice around our food system.
Hey, Noah, how do you think we could solve all the world's problems?
There are a lot of problems in this world, but like I think most of them stem from lack of nut butter.
I totally agree. And here at Nut Butter Labs, what's our goal?
Our goal is to spread nut butter with the world.
Exactly, because people think of nut butter as just something to spread on bread. But we think of nut butter as something to spread all across society.
On toaster strudel, on Eggo waffles.
On the top of a pancake, really anything you want that has to do with nuts and nut butter, we can provide it for you. Whether it's maple pecan butter, honey roasted cashew butter, or just some straight up salted peanut butter, we have the nuts you need.
So our choices as individuals also have a large impact on what we eat, obviously, because even though the price might be affected by the government, it's a lot harder for us to buy something. If we like know and educate ourselves about like the way that chickens are kept, what choices should we make when we eat food? And there exists a lot of student groups on campus here at Brown that are very focused on getting people to think about what is happening at the production stage to the animals that we might be eating if we're not vegetarian, or to like trying to convince us to become vegetarian.
Yeah, and I think that whether or not you agree with the content of these student activists, they raise important questions about being more thoughtful and reflective about the food that we eat. And we can see that in an example of just all the choices that we make, especially when you go to the grocery store or have to decide what you're eating, about like what goes into your thought process of how am I going to make a decision that is both good for me and good for the world.
For example, 3 weeks ago when I was shopping at Eastside, they had Equal Exchange bananas, which is a fair trade banana that is sold in the Northeast, and next to Chiquita and Dole, which are huge plantations that are also known for perpetuating a lot of worker rights violations. When I'm confronted with these two options, I would buy from Equal Exchange, that sort of is from small scale farmers. I know that sometimes this kind of trade-off is difficult to make, especially when you have a tight budget.
So as consumers, there are lots of different sort of signals that we see about how we can help make that help us make choices about the food that we eat. For example, there are fair trade labels or organic labels, or as we talked about earlier, all the different things that you can see on a carton of eggs. And there are real questions about the sort of validity and effectiveness of whether these labeling mechanisms, institutional structures that facilitate them, actually do help us make better or more informed choices about our food.
With a fair trade and organic label, when you see that, you think that that abstract set of standards, right, that third party certifiers, is, you know, are tasked with following up with, that those conditions are met, and so there's a kind of moral. I mean, I think the kind of moral buy-in, in a way, when consumers are looking to kind of to labels, that there's this supposed to be-ness of the product. The product is supposed to be a certain way.
So that was anthropologist Sarah Besky, a professor here at Brown, and she was just trying to help us question and answer the things that it means for these products to be labeled in certain ways. And we have these labels, which involve a lot of assumptions and ideas about our food system that aren't necessarily related to the label themselves. A lot of times we have assumptions about what organic food means and if organic food is like actually more ethical, what fair trade means and if fair trade actually is beneficial to farmers. And those assumptions are wrapped into all of these labels.
Yeah, so when we think about food and buying food, one term we might apply to ourselves is as consumers. We are consumers of the foods that we buy at grocery stores and restaurants, etc. And I think that brings up questions of how, like, what it means to be a consumer and how that affects your relationship around food movements and food policy and just the ways that we think about and interact with our fellow citizens around these questions. So as it turns out, movements such as, for example, the fair trade movement have been the result of consumer action.
If I put my money here, what effect will it have? Like, it's about kind of choosing the right things, and like through this idea that like choosing the right things will engender social justice. Like choosing this over that will make an effect here, right? It's about like this kind of idea of choosing to buy something, and having this intended effect, this ripple effect far, far, far away from oneself.
So what we choose to eat and what we choose to buy has a large impact on what we are signaling about like what we will eat and what we will choose. And if we will choose to buy things that are like slightly more expensive, if they have been raised in better, if they have been grown in more ethical conditions. And the consumer choices that we make have an impact on the producers of the products and on the things that are produced themselves.
Ways to make it more fair involve unions. They involve state intervention in the way corporations and, you know, farms do their business. They involve protecting labor. So especially marginalized, undocumented workers who have no legal recourse. It involves, you know, protecting all of them. That is what, like, that kind of, you know, intervention is a way to make production fair, way more than labels.
So here Besky is echoing a lot of what Hens was saying earlier, where you have all of these choices and all of these ways that government is heavily impacting the things that we choose to eat and what we choose to do with our money. And possibly the greatest way that we can impact and we can be ethical consumers is by, instead of focusing on our consumption, focusing on the ways that we can implement change through policy.
So to me, what Besky is saying here is getting at the idea of empowerment in food choices. I feel like we've been talking a lot in this episode about big sort of policy and identity and huge like understandings of these massive food systems. But I think that the point that Besky's trying to make is that individuals in their own actions can have some serious consequence, both in terms of their actual impact on, say, like the climate or sustainability, and also in how they understand themselves. And I think that that's sort of where the idea of, say, the term like ethical consumer comes in, is there's no law that mandates who is an ethical consumer, but the fact that a person, an individual, can identify with this idea and have that influence their view of justice, of what's right, of what it means to be sort of a good participant in this food system that we all have to take part in, ends up having a bigger impact than we might think could just come from one person.
So how do you choose which eggs to buy?
I think that that's an example of me not being super reflective. And obviously, we've been talking for a long time about the ways that we identify as ethical consumers. And I think that, say, because I'm a vegetarian, I think that I'm making some sort of bigger impact and making responsible, just choices about the food that I eat. And then that doesn't always manifest all the way down the line in which I make my choices about eggs. And I don't think that's consistent and might raise issues about how we really understand ourselves as consumers.
Or does part of it honestly have to do with the idea that like when you make these choices about like buying something that says like organic or free trade, and then you're just like, oh, I'm a vegetarian, so I can buy the eggs that are just like where all the chickens are held up in like these little cramped cages. And the chickens start getting shaped like their cages because they're so big.
Well, when you say it like that, I think that you're right. I think there is an amount of moral licensing that I do, and I don't want to speak for other vegetarians or consumers, but there's a sense in which if I can rationalize doing one good thing, then I might save the extra dollar buying a non-organic bell pepper as opposed to an organic bell pepper. And I don't think that that's necessarily an accurate calculation, but is something that we should think about, that the idea of being an ethical consumer isn't necessarily monolithic and people might not be consistent even if they're identifying with the term.
Yeah, but I feel like part of what we're getting at this whole episode is the idea that it's just like thinking about these things and knowing about these things, like that we moral license sometimes, that we like don't know what exactly free trade means or like what organic means, but like what these labels can help tell us, and thinking about what choices are being made by our government and just being cognizant of all these choices that are happening when we choose what to eat. That's something that we need to think about, and that thinking about it itself is a step towards achieving some greater change.
Definitely. I think I agree. That's what we've talked about a lot. And I think that because the more people that do that, we sort of change the dynamic that we've talked about of having such a small amount of people being in such control of the way we understand food, the way we produce food and subsidize food. So the more people think about whether or not they're always following their own rules is going to have an impact on how our food system actually works. So something that I think is a takeaway from this episode and just thinking about food in general is that it's no piece of cake to make ethical, responsible consumer choices.
Yeah, I mean, and I think it's also important to just like take with a grain of salt the things that we're talking about when we're talking about food.
Sure. So in a nutshell, I think that there are multiple lenses through which we can think about food. There's these big policy questions in which there might be something fishy going on with only a few people getting to influence the policy choices. And then there are also more individual ways in which we can sort of impact our food system. That might seem to put you in a pickle. Should you just be a person who is passive and waiting for the government to legislate better? Or should you be someone who's going to go out and be an activist, maybe bite off a little more than you think you can chew and make a big impact in your community by building solidarity?
And we really don't want to sugarcoat things here. The environmental impacts that come from agriculture and food production are seriously harmful.
Yeah. And so I think that although we've discussed a lot of tough topics, we don't need to have a uniformly positive conclusion. Food is really complicated, and there's no such thing as a free lunch. I don't want to spill the beans here, but there just aren't easy questions to how we can build a more sustainable, environmentally just, economically accessible food system. And sometimes that's just the way the cookie crumbles.
But sometimes it's impacted by what you choose to do. So don't just accept the way the cookie crumbles and make chewier cookies. All right, that's our show. And to close, we'd like to thank Alan Hance and Sarah Besky for joining us and helping talk to us about what ethical consumerism really is.
Yeah, and we'd also like to thank our wonderful team of podcast associates. So Izzy Baeza helped write the script today. And then, as always, helped with recording and podcasts and editing, Rachel Lim, Henry Peebles-Capine, Moses Lerber, Kate Dario, Toby Lepecki, and our executive producer, Emily Scahill.